And welcome to Comic Culture. Am I welcoming them to Comic Culture, Chris?
You should be, yes.
Welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop, broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station.
Nice.
Thanks to who, Chris?
Thanks to us.
Yes, and yeah. Podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I'm Chris Owen, Professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And every week, Chris and I gather to
We missed a week last week.
We did miss a week last week.
You know what? So we're still aiming for that 40 shows this whole year.
That's right.
But we've already got about three that we're missing. So, you know, we've only got about 9 weeks, so we can't have a show.
That's right.
That's okay. We're gonna make up for it in our liveliness and our entertainment.
That's right. In our information that we pass on to you, and in just our sunny disposition.
Sunny disposition.
We start the show every week with Chris chiming in on stuff that if you walk into your local comic book shop today, you'll find these comics on the New This Week rack. And like every week, we have a sponsor for New This Week, and this week it's Stella Artois. Club Soda. It's the Club Soda of French-speaking Belgium.
Nice.
Qu'est-ce que c'est ça? Soda de Club Stella Artois.
I like that. That's good.
I don't even know if there is a French-speaking part of that.
I don't know if there is, but...
The south is the Falloons.
What's a Falloon?
It's the part of Belgium, and the southern part of Belgium is the Walloons.
Okay.
The Walloons, sorry.
Yeah, okay.
And then the northern part of Belgium is like the Belgians, the Flemish.
Okay.
That's right. It's the Flemish and the Walloons, and apparently they hate each other.
I'm
just making that up. I don't know if they hate each other, but I'm not really listening. It's better
anyways.
Drama if I say that they hate each other.
Okay.
I'm sure they get along quite fine.
Well, listen, let's talk about New This
Week.
Yeah,
get me out of this.
Yeah, I'm trying. You're not letting me. Okay, so first up, I got to talk about this. This one appeared on my radar from IDW, and this one's called Punk's Not Dead.
Punk's not dead. I beg to differ.
Well, no, like so, but it's not like it's not punk. Punk apostrophe s. It's like punks plural.
Oh, I see. I get it.
Right.
Now. Right.
Right. So it's called Punk's Not Dead. At least that's the way it's spelled on the title.
Anyway. I understand.
Maybe it's meant to be, but it's sort of got like some. You know, I don't know. It's got vibes from The Clash and Joe Strummer and Sid Vicious.
I like it.
You know, from, what is that, Sex Pistols?
Yeah, Sex Pistols and The Clash.
So, you know, it's got sort of a weird sort of punky kind of
vibe.
Were
you ever into punk?
No.
Either was I.
Not really. You know, I had friends that were into punk. And, you know... I listened to some punk, obviously. I think everybody listened to punk a little bit growing up. But yeah, I never really got all that into it. Interesting. The art's actually kind of neat looking. It's interesting. Story's kind of weird and wonderful in a psychedelic vertigo kind of style. But yeah, Punk's Not Dead, Black Crown by IDW.
Right. If you're into two-chord comics.
Yeah, right.
Punk's Not Dead is for you. Check it out at your local comic book shop.
Okay, next up, we've got Doctor Strange Damnation number 3. Now, Doctor Strange Damnation number 3, this is by, who is this by here? This is Donny Cates and Nick Spencer with art by...
Art Beldazar.
Simon Kudransky.
Oh.
And basically, this is a story all about, you know, Doctor Strange, and it's got to hold on. I'm going to read you the list of the characters.
Read me the list of the characters.
We've got Iron Fist, Moon Knight, Doctor Voodoo, Man Thing, Ghost Rider, Scarlet Spider, Mephisto, Wong, Blade, and Elsa Bloodstone. So it's got all those mystical characters in it, and interesting art. It's got, you know, especially the Iron Fist and Ghost Rider stuff.
I bet you that's going to be a great story, my friend.
It's awesome. I love it.
Right. There's a lot of guys on the cover with their heads on fire.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of Ghost Rider type people, and yeah.
All right. Hey, that's Damnation, or as they say, I don't know where, but Damnation number 3 is at your local comic book shop.
All right. Next up, we've got, what do we got here? We've got Amazing Spider-Man. Now, this is Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, number 18.
So
This is that Renew Your Vows storyline that's going on right now. So, which is
up to 18?
Up to 17, sorry.
Did I say how long does it take to tell a Renew Your Vows story?
You'd think you
go to church, you renew your vows,
and, you know, this
and
is,
you're off.
This is the thing. Here's the thing. And this is the problem that I have with a book like this. Does this really deserve 17 issues, 18 issues, whatever it's going to happen? Like, get over it already. Like,
there are better comic titles that never got a dinner.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
Well, listen, I haven't read Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, so maybe I was rushed to judgment there. Why don't you, the listener, walk into your local comic book shop and check out Amazing Spider-Man 17 Renew Your Vows.
Right. Okay. Next up, we've got Batman. Number 43 of this is, of course, by Tom King, with art by, what's this guy's name here? Mikhail Yanin, and the cover by Hugo Petrus. So, you know, Tom King's doing amazing stuff right now with his artwork and with his storylines. And this one's all about Poison Ivy now. He's really diving into the whole Poison Ivy Catwoman storyline.
I like
I really like it a lot. It's really interesting. He's kind of taking a little play on all the different female characters here. Even Supergirl's in this.
Hey,
and,
Chris.
Yeah, and Harley Quinn. So,
how does that work over at DC if you are a Batman villain? Do you got to, like, walk into a waiting room and pull one of those service numbers?
I think so.
And wait your turn?
Yeah.
Because Batman has so many classic, fantastic villains. And really, you're diluting them if you put them in a hodgepodge story of where there's 17 villains involved. Like, I like reading a Batman story where he's taken on the Riddler.
Right.
And then in the next arc, he's, you know, the Penguin's up to shenanigans.
I totally agree.
But there's too many of them.
There's too many now.
Wait 3 years
before you get to your favorite character.
To get to your favorite character.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that because.
Yeah, but how do you deal with that as a fan? I'm not a black. What's this girl's name again?
Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy fan. I like the Oracle. No, that's a.
That's another. Yeah.
I like. Penguin. Help me out here.
Penguin. Right.
And, you know, when's the next time a Penguin arc is going
to come? Well, you know. It's a great point.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't say great. It's a good point.
At least
it's interesting anyways because,
stop talking because it's downgrading every time you open your mouth.
Well, here's the thing. Occasionally you're going to get a character like that's going to have a great rogues gallery, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Flash has a great rogues gallery. Spider-Man has a great rogues gallery, right? So they've got all kinds of supporting characters that you love,
right?
That are awesome,
right?
You know, but you can't have the same character coming back all the time.
Well, you can't have Joker stories every other arc.
I would hate that. That would be stupid.
Yeah, just because Joker's the most popular, you can't have Joker stories every other arc.
I totally agree.
But like I said, on the flip side, if Bats, and he probably does, I'm just going to throw a number out, he's got 15 strong villains.
Oh, yeah, easily 15.
And if arcs are 4 to 5 issues long, you're looking at 70 issues before you get to your villain.
And then this is where, you know, you get your miniseries and all that kind of stuff.
That's a way to solve it.
Right?
You're right.
You know, so you get a Batman miniseries that he just takes on the Penguin.
Or Detective, he's got a title. Batman's got a title. Batman and Robin, he's got... Yeah, you're right. I guess they're alleviating the pressure that way.
Right, but if you're strictly a Batman comic book fan, and you only want to buy just Batman, the title, then you're going to wait for a while.
Because, let's say you are... Okay, let's use King. He's telling the best Batman stories right now, so you can't wait for your Riddler King Batman story. Well, you might have to wait a few years.
That's right. Right. That's right.
All
right,
Batman 43 at your local comic book shop.
Okay, and finally we have Archie.
Archie.
So Archie is, as we've talked about many times on the show.
Your last name is, aren't you?
Andrews.
Oogly.
Oogly, and that's from the Flintstones.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's
that's
not
when, that's when that's when you know what was his name? Hold
Barney?
On.
Barney?
No, wait. Alfred Brimstone? No, what was his name?
I don't know.
He was
oh,
he was
they were looking at the archaeology.
Well, he was an Alfred Hitchcock.
That's right.
Takeoff, that's and right. They said, "I know what your real name is. It's Archie Oogly."
All right.
And the guy said, "That says archaeology."
Hey, yes. Speaking of that, while we're on a tangent, let's catch another one. Because I see one up
Alfred
ahead.
Brickrock, I think his name is.
Alfred Brickrock. So, you know how Flintstones had a great way of extrapolating the stars of the day?
Yeah.
Stoney Curtis, Cary Granite.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I didn't know, but I was online last night doing my Undervalued Spotlight, which we'll talk about later. And I read that Mary Jane Watson was influenced and inspired directly by and Margrock.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I did not know that. The redhead.
Yeah.
It was Anne Margrock that was the template for Mary Jane Watson.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, eh?
That's good. Look at that. You actually know something.
Look at me.
Oh, how about that?
All right.
Anyways, Archie's out today.
Oh, right. We're talking about Archie.
Story by Mark Waid and Ian Flynn, and art by Audrey Mock. And this, of course, is the Archie that's sort of the new Archie, I'll call it. It's more... I don't know. What do you want to say? More
teen lit.
Teen lit.
More mature.
A little more mature.
Mature.
That guy looks like me in this cover. Anyways, Archie number 29 is out on your newsstands today.
Fantastic, Archie 29 at your local comic book shop. Now, Chris dove into a few, but trust me, there's tons more at your local comic book shop. So head on in and peruse the new this week.
All right, that's always the usual spot where we're going to have a musical interlude here. So we're going to have an all Spider-Man Krantz show today. So we're going to start off, we had some Spider-Man already, and this one is, of course, called Underground Swing.
Yeah, baby. Swing it.
Swing it.
All right, listen, that brings us to industry news. And industry news is brought to you by Guinness, the only stout club soda on the market.
Nice.
And worth every penny.
Oh, very good. Very good. I like that.
That club soda from Guinness was super popular on the weekend, Chris.
Absolutely.
During
St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day. And I happened to be at the Toronto Comic Con.
Oh, how was that?
Oh, Chris.
Okay, so hold on. First of all, Toronto Comic Con, this was a 3-day show, right?
It was a 3-day show.
So, and, you know, it's not a show that's as widely known because it's sort of an odd time of year.
Like, yeah.
March is typically not a big Comic Con month.
Well, Informa, who own Fan Expo,
right?
The big Toronto show in September, Labor Day weekend. Well, they like to put one on in the spring as kind of like, hey, you know, we're the big boys on the block, you know, and they put on a pretty good show. It's a 3-day show.
How was it?
Super well attended. It was really well attended. I would say probably a record crowd. I don't know. I don't have the numbers from anybody yet, but definitely I would say a record crowd.
Nice.
The aisleways looked busy. Yep, the cosplayers were having fun.
Good.
Chris, every dealer that I talk to, and I mostly talk to the vintage comic dealers.
Right.
Because I'm a vintage comic.
Because you're a vintage guy.
Yeah. And so we all kind of know each other, and we all bounce stuff off each other. Hey, how you doing?
It's not nearly as big as the Fan Expo, where it's got, like, you know, doesn't have celebrities like
not
you
as
know,
many. It has like some, but it has Artist Alley. But it has like, well, you know how Fan Expo has like both convention centers and everything in between.
Right.
This has half of one of the convention
half
centers.
Half of one convention center.
Half
okay.
of the South Convention okay. Center building.
Okay.
So, yeah, but, you know, the bottom line is for the amount of space it had, it was super well attended.
Okay.
Everybody seemed to be doing okay as a vendor. And it was good. Like, back issue comics. What I found was the collectible comics, the back issue comics, the vintage comics.
Yep.
Everybody seemed to be doing well.
Oh, good.
That was selling them.
Well, because you know, when you go to a Fan Expo, I mean, I love Fan Expo, but really, if you're going there to buy old comics, it's not the greatest, because it's cost prohibitive for the average comic book dealer.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, not a lot of dealers go to that who have, unless you've got a big store and it's part of it. But like, your mom and pops aren't going to go to it.
Right.
Whereas I would imagine a show like this, probably it's a little less expensive to buy a table.
It is, but not that much, Chris. Not that much. And the thing though is I think this is my just personal opinion, but I think the how can I say that is if you want the really good comics, going to that one day show at your local church basement, you know, where the vendors are paying $20 a table,
yeah,
is probably not a great place to go to find the good stuff that you want,
right?
But at the same token, those are places that you're going to find bargains.
Totally, yeah.
And every now and then, you read the story about the guy that brought in his Spider-Man collection and he sold it, right?
Yeah.
But if you really want good stuff, you kind of, everything's a part of a formula, right? So, you know, the bigger dealers will go to these bigger shows, but they have to sell in volume, because trust me, the comic book collecting community is to a point where almost everybody that's selling them realizes their prices.
Right, yeah. And it's not like the old days where you can get really
a little
bargains.
Lady walks in and just drops off a bag and says, yeah, I'll give me $10, and you got $100 of comics.
Those days are gone.
But yeah, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
So you're buying a first appearance of Punisher for so much money, and you're just trying to make something on top.
Right.
Because the guy selling it maybe needs money right there.
Yeah.
So your margin, you hope, will cover your expenses and make you some profit.
Right.
So, but the people, what my point is, the people looking for those books, they know they have to go to these cons with dealers that kind of know what they're doing, that those guys might have those books.
Yeah.
And then it's up to them to haggle with them and see if they can get it for a reasonable price.
Right.
And so, what I mean, it was good. I liked it. You know cons, Chris. You're a veteran.
Oh, yeah.
A million cons.
Yeah.
And I would say it's the start of the Toronto con season, which is fantastic, and everybody had a good time. And I would say the best book, though, in terms
the
of...
The number one book that people were buying.
Yeah, like if I can give a little mini market report, key issues were paramount. Out of our bins, I sold Jungle Actions, Black Panthers, anything associated with Black Panther did really well at this show. But the number one book for us, though, was Amazing Spider-Man number 300.
Now, number 300, that's the first appearance of Venom.
Right. Amazing Spider-Man 300.
Now, of course, we've got the Venom movie coming up
soon. That's right, in October.
Right.
I brought 5 copies.
Okay.
And we sold 3.
Oh, okay. You didn't sell all 5.
No, we sold 3. The other 2 were in a box behind the table, which I realized on Sunday. So we may have sold more had we had given the books the opportunity to be seen.
Fair enough.
It's funny because I didn't realize there was this overflow box.
Okay.
And I guess the person goes, yeah, we got a Spidey 300 up. I'll put this, there's no room on the table.
Right.
I'll put this overflow box here. And there were two more Spidey 300s over there.
You'll sell them.
That's fine. Yeah. They're good books to have. We had five copies. We sold three of them. Two of them were raw copies, ungraded.
Yep.
And one of them was a graded copy.
Nice.
So that was the hit, I think, of the weekend, because there was just tons of speculation around Venom. So, as you know, I do an undervalued spotlight every week.
Yes.
On Comic Book Daily, the same place that hosts this show. And so I gave myself a little mandate. I try to have a little fun with this. So, I got to do a spotlight next week. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the Toronto Con.
Yep.
And I'm going to have my eyes and ears open.
Right.
And I'm going to talk to people.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get some good source material for future undervalued spotlights.
And how'd you do?
I did okay.
Yeah.
I think I got three of them pretty pegged.
Oh, nice.
And I picked one of them this week that I posted a couple of days ago on Comic Book Daily. And it was The Amazing Spider-Man number 258.
Okay, so now what is special about Amazing number 258? Now, it can't be Venom, because Venom came out in 300.
Right, but as you know, so as I was researching it, because I talked, believe it or not, a guy had it on a pile, and he had what do you have? He had one of the Spidey 300s. He had the Marvel Superhero Secret Wars. Remember that one?
Yeah, the first costume.
And he had, and he asked me if I had the Black Cat 90. Sorry, the Spectacular Spider-Man 90.
Okay.
Which was the other issue.
Right.
That had the first appearance. So there were three books, Chris.
There's two books.
No, I'm rushing ahead so fast now, because I have 72 things I want to say.
Okay.
I got to
simmer down. Okay, so...
Back up a bit.
Okay, so wait. Beep, so, first of all, beep, 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 beep. Now, you've got Amazing Spider-Man 258.
Yes.
We'll take that and put that aside.
Put that aside for now. Let me tell you the backstory.
Backstory. So, Amazing Spider-Man, the black costume...
The black costume.
Initially was meant to be premiered in Marvel Superhero Secret Wars number 8.
But it wasn't. Yes.
Because there was a shipping delay.
That's right.
And there was a problem with it. And so actually, Spectacular Spider-Man was Spectacular Amazing. Spectacular
Spider-Man. There were three issues, Chris. Three issues that were dated May 1984.
Okay.
That all share the distinction of first black costume.
Okay.
Amazing Spider-Man 252.
Right.
Spectacular Spider-Man 90.
Right.
And Marvel Team-Up 141.
Right.
Right.
No, Marvel Team-Up.
Yeah, 141 with Daredevil and Black
Widow.
But
which one really came out first?
Well, we don't know. I think...
What do you mean you don't know?
Well, we don't know. I think... The guide says all three. It's concurrent.
Really?
I think... It was Spectacular Spider-Man 90, because even though Amazing Spider-Man says introducing,
there's got to be somebody out there that remembers these.
The reason why I think it's Amazing Spider-Man 90, because it was just him on the last panel, sort of like a Hulk 180 thing.
Yeah.
And then next week, I bet the weekly shipping. Next week, Spidey 252 hit, and it's like, the rumors are true.
Right.
And then probably 141 team up.
Oh, sorry, team up. Yeah.
So those three books were tied month, year for the release of the thing.
Right.
And those were May 84. Secret Wars 8 didn't come out to December 84, so it was almost like a retcon.
Right.
The new costume was out.
I remember that.
And then like 7 months later, that explains the origin of the new costume.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing I learned last night as I was doing this 258, which we'll eventually get to, is there was a young fan, I forget his name now. It might have been Randy something.
Let's call him Rutiger.
Yeah, you can read it in the spotlight.
Okay.
In 1982, Marvel had a contest of ideas.
Okay.
And so he came up with this symbiotic costume.
A fan did.
And he wrote about how it's a life form on its own, but Spidey puts it on and it tries to take whatever.
Okay.
So Jim Shooter, the editor of Marvel, loved it. And he paid this guy $220 for the idea.
Come on.
Yeah. Really?
I didn't know this story at
I
all.
Oh, $220 for the idea.
Okay.
Right. So, and of course, the rest is history.
Yeah.
But what I knew, what I learned about it too. So remember those Amazing Heroes fanzines?
Yes.
And Marvel, what is it? That remember that comic that was like Marvel Age or whatever they were?
Marvel Age was 25 cents.
Marvel
to start.
Age.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also like a coming soon type
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, all those publications had Spider-Man black costume pictures in it.
Really?
Predating Spidey 252, May 84. Going back into November 83. There were fanzines with the Spider-Man black costume.
Really?
And they're all collectible now.
Well, you know,
because they're technically the first appearances of
Marvel Age, because Marvel Age was
number 12.
Marvel Age was almost like a, how do I describe it? I don't want to say it's a fanzine, but it was almost a newsletter. It was,
yeah.
It was super cheap. That was one of those books that, as a fan, you know, you'd be like, okay, you know what? I got them. I got $10 to buy my books.
I believe.
And then 25 cents would go to that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I believe, I forget the date, you can read again the article. It might have been December of that year, the May 84. It might have been, January 84 or whatever, but they had the black costume in it.
Really?
So
is that going to be considered the first appearance then?
I don't know, but there was one even before that on those Amazing Heroes, that thicker fanzine.
But Amazing Heroes wasn't a Marvel publication.
But
though.
It was a fanzine that had pictures of the black costume Spider-Man.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
Because remember, he won the contest in 82.
Right.
Right. So it was all kind of in the works.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I guess getting back to what we were talking about.
What were you talking about?
I have no idea. Yeah. The Spidey 258.
Oh, right, right.
Right. So I'm thinking in my head, and he goes, Spidey 258. And I go, why you got that in a pile? Because he was looking for the other ones.
Right.
And I had the wherewithal at that moment to ask him, you know, what's that? Like, because on the cover, there's Peter Parker and the suits, the
right.
cloth costumes of the red and white and blue.
Right.
And the black are kind of vying
kind of
for
fighting kind of thing,
for
yeah.
him. And he goes, oh, this is the one where he beats away his symbiotic costume. Like, he takes it away
right.
and with his blaster gun.
Right.
I think he used Captain Mr. Fantastic.
He had
a
sonic gun.
That's right. Yeah, Mr. Fantastic yeah, yeah. sonic gun. And I go, but wait a minute, didn't he have the black costume all the way to 300? Because I forget my Spideys in the 80s.
Right, right.
I wasn't reading them in the 80s.
Right.
And
no, because he couldn't have, because Venom... So there was another issue where he got rid of the black costume.
Yeah.
And then so Mr. Fantastic had that. But then somehow the black costume attacked him again, and he had to go to a bell tower.
Right.
And the bell tower, he used the sound from the bell tower to separate himself from the black costume.
And then the black costume...
The black costume kind of whimpered away.
Went to Eddie Brock.
Ended up on Eddie Brock.
Right,
yeah.
right. So, but the black costume that Spidey wore on the covers post 258 was just a costume that the Black Cat sewed for him.
Ah,
and
okay.
I think that was a way to placate, to satisfy
the fans.
Fans that actually liked the Black costume.
Totally, yeah.
Because at the beginning, everybody hated it.
No.
At the very beginning.
Well, you know what? Okay, it depends on your age group. Because
fair enough.
I was
a
little younger.
Kids loved it. The old fuddy-duddies hated it.
Right, exactly.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So I go, because... At my booth, because I'm an old fuddy-duddy,
yep.
Guess what I have on the wall, Chris? I have Amazing Spider-Man 300.
Right.
I have, when I have it, Marvel Super Heroes 8.
Right.
I have Amazing Spider-Man 252.
Right.
Those are all wall books,
yeah,
my
yeah,
friend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in my Mylar section, maybe not on the wall, I may have Marvel Team-Up 141.
Yeah.
You know? Over in my, I don't know if I'll ever sell these half-off bins,
yep.
I have Spidey 258.
Right.
And I'm going, well, this is an unsung hero of this whole
totally,
saga.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other ones get all the limelight.
Yep.
I go, this one, nobody collects this.
No.
But it's an integral part of this whole world of the
right.
black costume.
You're right.
It's an important issue
yep.
in the black costume saga.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
It gets no love. It never got to dinner.
Never got to dinner.
Right.
Yep.
So I go, what a perfect pick. I mean, you can pick them up for $5 all day in people's bins.
Yep.
What
yep.
a great way to have a piece of
it.
The Venom saga.
I love it. I think it's a great idea.
There you go.
Great idea.
Wow, it took a long, long time to get
oh
to
well you I feel like I need a cigarette.
Yeah, why don't we have a musical interlude instead?
That, all right, let's do that. So let's have a quick musical interlude here. We're going to go back and continue on with our Spider-Man theme, which seems to be for today. And this one we'll do Walt's drinking some club soda out of a Spider-Man cup today too. But anyways, we're going to go to this one's the Spider-Man the Leader.
Great song, Chris. Like I said before, I think I might be able to get the drums on that. Yeah, I can play that.
And I'll have to be playing whatever that is, the oboe or something like that.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, so it takes us to the second part of industry news, and that, of course, is brought to you by Remy Martin Club Soda, the almost the official drink of comic culture.
Almost,
Club Soda.
Almost.
The bubbly with a bite, as we like to call it. You know what? We got cut off with the whole Spider-Man and Spidey 300. But last week, I forgot to tell you this. Last week, I had a local collection come in.
Right.
And this is going to be warm to your heart. And in this local collection, there was a cool little flyer and a little sauce tray, like a dish tray.
Like a paper plate?
Paper plate. That's what I meant.
otherwise known as sauce tray.
And it had the wedding of the year, Spider-Man and Mary Jane. And this would have been from 1986, 1987. It was the Silver Snail in Hamilton.
Yes, I see.
Had
that.
John Romita signing at the store, 1987 or 88, whenever it was. I believe it was 87.
Yeah.
And the Silver Snail in Hamilton had John Romita visiting, and they made these beautiful little flyers, which I got,
yep,
and this beautiful paper plate that says Marvel's 25th anniversary, signed by John Romita.
Yep.
The little flyer was signed by John Romita,
yep,
and the reason I'm bringing that up to the listenership, young Chris Owen was there.
I was there.
He was there.
I don't think I was actually working there at the time.
Now, how old would have you been?
What year is that again?
87. 86,
87. So I would have been like 14, 15
right,
years old.
Right.
You know, so I wasn't working there yet, unfortunately, even though I would have been loving to work there. I did work there eventually.
Uh-huh.
For 10 years, probably. Now, so I do remember this very well. So not only, so we had a guy dressed up. There was a guy dressed up as Spider-Man.
Right.
That was paid for by Marvel, I believe.
Yep.
They actually had a little ceremony, a little wedding ceremony type thing where they cut a cake.
Mm-hmm.
And they had wedding cake that they gave out to all the fans. And they had those paper plates were what the wedding cake was
right,
for.
Right.
So John Romita was there at the time.
Uh-huh.
So John Romita,
did you get to meet John Romita?
I met John Romita twice.
Uh-huh.
He came back for a second appearance.
Yeah.
So you gotta remember, I was a stupid kid back then.
Yeah.
Stupid kid back then.
You ain't a kid anymore.
I know. I did get some sketches from John Romita at the time. I got Ariel from the Fallen Angels, which was a comic book that I was buying at the time.
Were you a stupid kid?
I was a stupid kid.
Okay.
And I got Howard the Duck sketch.
Well, that's okay.
So
should have got a Spidey sketch, though.
Now, later on, the second time I met him, I got a Spider-Man sketch with Gwen Stacy in the background.
I
so
like that
I did
one.
Get a,
I believe I that get, one graces the walls of Big B Comics in Hamilton.
It used to.
Used
I,
to
I,
yes,
I finally
yes,
took it back and
that's
put it
right,
in my own man
yes,
den. But
we
yes, it was there for a while.
Book.
So yeah, I met him a few times. Got a couple of nice sketches. Oh, awesome guy. Really awesome guy. John Romita was a class act back then, as I'm sure he is now still. But you know, working at the Snail at the time, it was that was one of those events that I think I knew what was going on, but didn't know the scope of what was going
on.
Like, oh, I hear there's something going on out of the store today. I better go down there.
Right.
And sure enough, it's this giant party that they're having. Now, if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong about this, if I remember correctly, I believe that at the time, Marvel Comics actually had an actual wedding ceremony with somebody who was portraying, obviously, Mary Jane and Spider-Man. And I believe it was at one of the New York stadiums. And they had a giant party at the stadiums
like
at the time.
Like a big wedding.
Like a big wedding reception kind of thing. I don't remember exactly where. Again, I remember this was a long time ago for me now.
Right.
But I do remember they had that. And so there's lots of stuff going on back at the time. And Spider-Man. But I remember Spider-Man was there. And I remember knowing about Gwen Stacy, even though Spider-Man was marrying Mary Jane at the time. And I thought, I'm a upstart kid.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see if I can get this guy, right?
Uh-huh.
So I remember going up to Spider-Man saying, to Spider-Man, the guy
Spider-Man.
That was playing Spider-Man.
Oh, I see, I'm sorry.
The guy that was actually portraying Spider-Man, thinking to myself, this guy's an actor, he's not gonna know anything about
nothing.
So I said, Spider-Man, whatever happened to Gwen Stacy, thinking that he's not going to be able to tell me the story?
Who's that?
Yeah. That's what I thought he would say. Yeah. And his answer to me was, well, I guess she's out of the picture now, eh, kid? Good answer.
Tough guy.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, let's move on. But it's great. You know what? When that walked into the shop, I go, I got to show these
to
Chris.
Yeah, I remember that.
And when I showed it to you, you go, oh, it triggered just a rush of memories for
you.
Remembered it so well.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, let's talk about this cool thing about you were telling me earlier about Action 1000.
Action 1000, yes. Where is that? Where do we got here? So Action 1000, that's becoming an enormous event, project, whatever you want to call it for DC Comics. Now, Action 1000, it's a monthly comic. Action Comics has been monthly for a long time now, obviously for 1,000 issues. So they're making a big deal of it because it is the, Action Comics number one, started the first appearance of Superman.
Right.
So now we're having, sci-fi, the Science Fiction Network in the United States is coming out with their sci-fi Krypton series.
Right.
Action Comics number 1000 is going to be sold to all kinds of retailers on April 18th. Now, having said that, why are you saying April 18th? Because now all of a sudden it's going to be midnight on April 18th.
Yeah.
Where retailers are going to be opening up their stores and having little parties.
So you're not allowed to sell comics till Wednesday morning when you open.
Correct.
So most comic shops, let's say, open at 10. You're not allowed to sell a comic that comes in on Tuesday until Wednesday morning.
Okay, so if you think about, for those of you that obviously don't know, the logistics of it, the new books come in usually Tuesday.
Right.
Most stores close up at 5 or 6.
And they work hard. Yeah.
Tuesday night, get the books sorted out until
ready
for first thing in the morning on Wednesday morning.
Yes.
So then the fans come in on Wednesday morning, they can buy their books. What we're saying here now is that people are going to be opening up and having an after-store party on Tuesday night.
Tuesday night at midnight.
And you can come in and have a little get-together.
You know what I see here, Chris? I see a whole bunch of comic shop employees going, yeah, great move, DC.
Great move. Now I got to work until midnight?
After midnight? Yeah. I got to start at midnight? Thanks a lot. Yeah, no good two-bit.
But there's all kinds of things going on here. So there's going to be, a new poster coming out, which is 80 years of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
There's
a lot of variants of this book, though.
There's a ton.
There's those, those Superman in the 30s.
Through the ages.
Superman in the 40s, all the through the ages like that,
Which is cool because some of them are weird because it's like, I remember there was one by Jim Stranko or something like that, which I don't remember him ever working on a Superman book before, but I guess he has that style of
the
60s or
And they're doing the sketch variant where it's just a blank cover, so you can take it to Con and pick your favorite Superman artist have him. You know what I would do with mine?
What would you do with yours?
I would go to Stan Lee and go, Stan, just sign the middle of this.
Stan, can you draw Batman on this?
Can you, Stan?
Can you draw Spider-Man on this? Yeah.
Just draw whatever you feel like.
Put a happy face on it.
Put a happy face on it. I say that in jest because Stan Lee's signing so many Marvel books that he had nothing to do with.
Right.
Why not transfer it over to DC?
Although I remember hearing that Stan Lee will basically sign anything you want. I think there's one thing, not two, I think one for sure. There was an unauthorized biography that somebody wrote about him.
Right.
And he refused to sign, that.
Right.
But other than that, he would sign pretty much anything else. I remember I was at a signing once. This is eight or so years ago. And some kid in front of me was getting him to sign. He created his own character, and his own character had like a hockey stick or something
that.
And he got Stan Lee to sign that hockey stick.
Oh, wonderful!
So, but it was like it had nothing to do with nothing.
Anything, nothing
right?
To do with anything. Yeah. Hey, speaking of hockey stick and signing,
that's an odd segue. But
I read somewhere that Wayne Gretzky, a national treasure here in Canada, will not sign his rookie card.
I've heard that.
He only signed one, and that was to his boy.
That's right. I've heard that. I've heard that he's only signed one. Now, I don't know if he made that decision way back in the day or after a while. But I remember hearing that he wouldn't sign rookie cards anymore because he only wanted his kids' kids to have them.
Right.
So whether or not that's still true or not, I don't know.
Right. And it's like, and saying on the signing thing is we were talking about it, us comic geeks, about a Captain America number 3 was on auction last week or 2 weeks ago, and that's from 1941, Chris, and that was the first published Stan Lee work.
Right.
I think it was a text story.
Okay, yeah.
And about Cap.
Yeah.
So it's Stan Lee's first work. 1941, Chris. Yeah. It's soon to be 80 years old.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
this
crazy.
Work. Yeah. Okay. And the spec was, and the talk was amongst the community, is like, yeah, the guy's going to get that and get a Stan Lee SIG for that, and that'll be, worth so much money. And I'm going, if I was Stan and I saw that on my desk, I'd go, yeah, I'll sign that for $20,000.
Right?
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like all these guys that just want to use signatures to make money. Yeah. Whatever. It's capitalism.
You know what?
It's capitalism both ways. Stan can lean the other way too.
That's
so,
right. Yeah.
Anyway,
but you know what? And all the power to him, really.
Yeah.
If he can make the money off of,
why not?
We're kind of digressing here, but the same thing goes for
the
comic artists. So you know, I as a guy that used to collect a lot of comic book art way back when, back in the day. You'd go up to an artist and they'd charge $20 or $30, and then it became $50, then it became $100, and now it's through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why, because you know. I can say this in all honesty. I've never sold a single piece of art.
And you have
I've ever
a
bought.
Beautiful collection.
Never sold anything. Mm-hmm. But a lot of guys will go up to a guy like, say, Adam Hughes.
Yeah.
And back in the day, Adam Hughes would charge $50 for a sketch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd go buy the sketch and then they put it up on eBay. And
who would you like me to sign this to? How about two eBay bidder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
To the highest bidder.
You know, right. And then they'd sell it on eBay for $500 or whatever, and then thousands now,
He got wind of that and said, hey, you want my signature or sketch?
You know, sketch?
It costs $250.
Yeah, it's going to cost
and
you more.
And then you roll the dice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I get it. I totally get it. I don't like it as a fan, but I get it.
So this Action 1000, I think that's what we're talking about.
We were talking, So we're so now we've got unsung hero, a guy I don't really like very much, Brian Michael Bendis, now is going to be doing a 10-page backup story with art by Jim Lee in Action Comics number 1000, which it irks me. It irks me, because here's a guy, Michael Bendis, that stamped his name on Marvel Comics for the last 20 years.
So what you're saying is Bendis is a guy that got a dinner, but shouldn't have got a dinner.
He's a guy that got a dinner, shouldn't have got a dinner.
Now
he's getting two dinners. He's getting a dinner from Marvel and a dinner from DC.
That's a whole new category.
He shouldn't have got a single dinner.
Red Buttons is turning in his grave right
now. I don't get it. Anyways, he's getting a dinner now from DC, and the guy hasn't even published a single thing from it. He's getting in top of the number one book that's going to come out from DC this year.
Right.
Really.
Right.
Action
and
Comics 1000.
He's getting sci-fi interviews. Yeah. And he's getting all
really,
kinds
really
of things.
Really boils my potato.
Oh, my goodness me. All right, Chris, what else are we going to talk about? I know we're running out of time.
That's okay. You know what? Let's continue to talk about comics here. Actually, you know what? I'm going to bring this up now. I was going to bring it up later on.
So bring it up.
We didn't get a chance to really... You mentioned earlier that you were selling a few books. I think before the show, you were talking about selling your Spider-Man 300.
Yeah.
Right? So I want to talk a little bit about 300s. Uh-huh. So in a roundabout way. Now, you said you sold a 300. Now, you sold multiple copies. Now, first of all, were these graded copies?
One was graded, two were not.
Okay. So, here's my question to you.
Yes, sir.
And I think this is an interesting point for those of you that are not necessarily involved in the comic book industry as collectors. As you probably are aware, most comic books dealers and buyers buy old comics that are graded by a professional company, and they get graded, they put in plastic, basically, and you can't open them up.
Right.
And they get graded from 0 to 10.
Hermetically sealed.
Hermetically sealed. I got to ask you, should everybody just go out and start getting all their comics graded?
No.
So why and why not?
Well,
why would they and why wouldn't they?
If it's the easiest answer to that, honestly, Chris, is if it's an investment,
yeah,
you should probably get it graded. My recommendation is if it's an investment, you shouldn't buy it unless it's graded.
Right.
Because the swing of one way or another. What happens when you buy a graded comic and it has that blue label from CGC, let's say?
Yeah.
That is telling you that, A, it's all there. All the pages are there. It's not missing a coupon.
Yeah.
B, that it hasn't been tampered with. There hasn't been like some ink added to the cover because there was a scuff on it.
Right.
Hasn't been restored or repaired. And C, a professional third-party trusted grading company has assigned it a grade out of 10. Not some schmo like me that really wants to sell it.
Right.
That's going to pump it up. Yeah, this is at least a fine, buddy. And you come back and it's like, oh, fine. This is at least a 6. So, and then you send it down and it comes back a 5.
So how do you know if you've got a book that should be graded or not?
Ah.
So,
everybody has the internets at their disposal. They can take, let's say, look at the cover and it'll say Amazing Spider-Man number 3.
Right.
Right on it. 12 cents, 3. There's a little square with 3. So they can type in Amazing Spider-Man and I think it's number 3, whatever.
Yeah.
And they can go online.
Yeah.
And they can kind of start doing some research on eBay, what these books sell for, and go, oh my goodness,
okay,
I have a comic that's worth hundreds, if not thousands of dollars.
Right.
And the same token, they may have a comic that says Amazing Spider-Man number 203.
Yeah.
And they go online and they see that that book sells for $10 or whatever.
Whatever. So is there a price cutoff where you say, this book should probably be graded?
Yes.
Okay. And what would you say that price cutoff is?
The price cutoff should be the problem is there's one part of the equation where the person won't know, and that's how to grade.
Right.
The price cutoff should generally be the market value subtracted by what you paid for it, subtracted by the cost of the shipping and the grading.
Okay.
So, for example, a book you pay $20 for a book, and you have to send it down to CGC, shipping and handling and grading, and pay another $40.
Right.
So and that's 60 now bucks. $60.
Right.
But at that grade, the book is worth $40.
Right.
Then you didn't do too well.
Okay. So what if? But is it still worth? They're worth someone's while. Mm-hmm. Let's say they have a book that they paid $20 for it, and they have to have it graded for $40, now it's $60, and then they get it back and it's graded $100.
Right.
Is that really worth it for $100
For $40 or whatever?
$40?
Yeah, because then when you go to sell it, it's time and effort, and then you have to pay a seller a fee like eBay 13% or something like that. So really that $187, so now you're up to $27 profit, but you had to spend time and effort and go to the post office and you made it cost you gas.
And a couple hours worth of time.
That's up to the person to decide. But what you don't want to do is be on the reverse side of that. You don't want to be on the negative side of that.
Right.
So you got to ask yourself, why am I getting this graded? Right. If I'm getting this graded for resale, then I'm going to watch those numbers.
Okay.
If I'm going to get this graded for posterity, for whatever, A keepsake. This is the first comic I ever bought.
Right.
It's a ragged ass 1.8 out of 10. It's worth $4. Right. Maybe. It might be worth 60 cents. It might not be worth anything.
Right, right.
But I'm willing to spend the $45 for the whole rigmarole procedure.
Yeah.
Because I want to save it.
Because I want to save it and I want to put it on my wall.
I'll put it on my wall.
Okay.
And so, my first comic ever.
Okay, okay. What if a guy buys a book that, you know, is worth $500,
uh-huh,
and he pays $500 for,
right,
it, but he doesn't know if he should get it graded or not because he's thinking to himself, well, this is kind of like an investment. I don't want to sell it now, but maybe I will in 5 years or 10 years.
So he bought it raw?
He bought it raw.
He bought it ungraded?
Ungraded.
Yeah, so that's the tricky part. Unless you're a savvy comic guy,
yeah,
I wouldn't be paying $500 for a comic unless I authenticated that it was, okay, complete and that it was unrestored.
Right. Okay. So what happened?
And that it was indeed the grade the seller says it is.
Right. So let's say, for example, I mean, I know you're a comic Overstreet Price Guide analyst. You're a savvy grader. You are very good at your grading. What if a guy, for example, bought a book off you,
right,
for $500,
right,
and didn't know what to do with it?
Right.
Does he get that $500 book graded, or does he wait, or does he just?
Again, I think it's what are his intentions. If his intentions are, there's a beautiful part. I remember a guy that bought. This won't mean anything to most of the listeners, but the Larson copy of Batman #1 back in the early 90s. And that book right now is probably worth $300,000, $400,000.
Okay.
And back then it was probably worth $10,000, $15,000.
Okay.
But what he told me is, Walt, when I got it, the first thing I did was I read it.
Right.
And I go, what are you, like, nuts?
Are you crazy?
You're crazy?
Yeah.
He goes, no. I wanted to read Batman 1, the original. I didn't want to read it in a reprint.
Right.
I didn't,
right,
want to read it in a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to read the real copy, right, of Batman 1, and I read it.
Right.
So I can say I read Batman #1.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it depends on what the guy wants to do with the book.
Okay, that's fair.
If he wants to read, or she wants to read, that first appearance of Spider-Man or first appearance of Kingpin or whatever, yeah, it is that's in that book that makes it worth that much money. They want to have the satisfaction of reading it at any time that they want.
Yeah.
And if they're careful with, you know, putting it back into the bag and the board to protect it and put it in a safe spot, you can keep it. But I guess my point would be the exit strategy would be the important thing there. If you do want to sell it and you want to recoup as much of your money as you can, perhaps even a profit.
Yeah.
Your best odds are if you grade it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
So, yeah. So that's the best way to say it.
Because it's hard these days. You know, you go to a comic convention and you can spend hundreds of dollars on a book.
Yeah.
Very easily.
Yeah.
But you don't know. So you buy a book that's raw, no, ungraded, and then, mm-hmm, what do you do with it? Do you just throw it in your pile, or do you get it graded with the rest of your stuff? Or
grading can be good, Chris. Like, I know guys and girls, well, mostly guys, I guess. I know them that they collect, let's say, the old DC comics, like Strange Adventures. Really,
right,
weird guys that collect,
yep,
those sci-fi anthology books from the,
yep,
50s, right?
Right, right.
They're really hard to come by.
Yeah.
Okay? But they're not that much money, is my point.
Right.
But, and they're looking for just solid copies, like 4s out of 10 or,
yep,
5s out of 10 will make them happy.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not looking to investment grade comics.
Right.
What they like to do is buy them online, graded at 3.5, 4.5.
Yeah.
The grading doesn't get the book any premium at all.
Right.
It's like, you know, let's say it's a $100 comic.
Yep.
It doesn't get $150 just because it's graded.
Right, right,
right.
Right? Yeah.
It'll get $100,
yeah,
or whatever. So what these guys do is they like buying online that way.
Yeah.
And as soon as it comes to their house, they crack it open.
Right.
And they put it in with their other ones. And they read it. And,
right,
and it's in amongst,
right,
their collections. The reason I say that they buy that is because they tell me, Walt, I know it's complete, I know it's unrestored, and,
right,
I know the grade is roughly what it should be.
Right.
Because a third-party grading company thing. So I don't mind buying online.
Oh, I see.
That way. But I've bought like a Strange Adventures number 8 from 1953 before, and I paid the guy $95, and it's come, and it's missing the last two pages.
Right.
What do I do now?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I didn't know. And you email the guy back, because I didn't know I bought it in a collection 15 years ago.
Yeah,
there's that whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Man, the book looked really good, and the guy told me it was a 5 out of 10, and I got it back, and like on the last two pages, there was like a mouse chewed off this, and there was the back cover had a huge crease he didn't send me the picture of, and it was more like a 3.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's safe buying. So grading doesn't necessarily mean you have to keep it graded.
Right. It's just a safe way of buying stuff.
Right. But my advice to anybody that buys for the grade is do not crack it open. So if you buy like a Spider-Man 300 and it's a 9.6.
Right.
And, you know, and that book is worth, I'm just making up a number here, like $800 Canadian at a 9.6. And you go, oh, I'd love to read this. Don't. Because if you open it and you read it and you do something small to it,
I'll
you
send it back.
And you send it back, it might get a 9.4 next time.
Right.
And the problem with that is you've probably lost $200.
Right. That's so fair. All right. Yeah.
So, all right. Anyway. Okay. So
Interesting.
Hey, does that answer your question?
Sure. Okay. Sure. All right. Listen, are we going to have a quick musical interlude here?
And then, sure can.
All right. Let's have a quick musical interlude, and then we're going to come back and finish off the show talking a little bit more about Black Panther. So hold on. What do we got here? Let's go to, I don't know. Let's have this one here. Okay.
Sweet sound of Krantz. Love it, Chris. Hey, listen, we only got a couple minutes, so we just wanted to congratulate the Black Panther movie for winning the box office five weeks in a row. An unheard of event. Last 19 years, I read it's only happened twice with Avatar and The Sixth Sense.
Crazy.
And it's passed $605 million domestic. They say it will pass Avengers for the record-setting $623 million for a superhero movie, which is just fantastic. I mean, there's no better news, really,
in the
comic book community that a movie like this, some third stringer, comes out of the weeds and just hits that grand slam, and everybody loves it. And it's sustained, and it's sustainable. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. So I really like that.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Really, so this, and that's domestically. So internationally, it has a global cumulative box office of $1.18 billion now already.
Woo!
So I mean, it's past Civil War, which was $1.14 billion, and Minions, which had I think it's supposed to be $1.06 billion. But yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Fantastic.
It's doing so well. It's great. I've been talking to so interestingly enough, I was talking to a friend of mine today, a guy that works with me at school, and we were talking about the Black Panther movie, and I said, "Have you seen Black Panther yet?" And he said, "No, not yet." And I said, "Oh, you should. It's good." And he goes, "Is it really? Like, is it really good? Or is it just people are going to see it because now it's become a phenomenon?"
The hype.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I said, "You know what? It's not my favorite of the Marvel movies, but it's a good movie."
Right.
Like, it's certainly not. I like Captain America Civil War and Winter Soldier better than this one.
Right.
But then Black Panther.
Whenever things like this catch on and catch the public imagination, like, it always becomes bigger than it is. Like, same thing with Avatar.
You know, exactly.
Avatar was a good movie, but it wasn't like the all-time greatest movie of all time.
Exactly.
But it was the all-time biggest seller of all time because it caught on word of mouth, and I got to go see it.
It's
I got to go see it. I got to go see it. again. Yeah, and it's a cultural event almost right now. That's right. So, and that's if for any reason, that's the reason to go see it. But it bodes well, I think. I think start of 2018, the comic book movie season launched with Black Panther, huge. And it's like, hello.
Yep. Well, and you know what? And if you haven't already got your tickets, tickets went on sale last Friday for Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah.
So, and that's like a month in advance. Yeah. More than a month in advance. Yeah. That movie comes out April 27th.
Speaking of that, that's lining up for Free Comic Book Day. And of course, you and I in the coming shows will start again canvassing all the listeners to support their local comic Absolutely. Book shop for Free Comic Book Day, because that is the most important calendar day of the year for your local comic book shop.
Yes.
Hey, we're out of time. Comic Culture was engineered and produced by Chris Owen today, and we're on comicbookdaily.com. And we are always on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station. Please, please go out and support your local comic book shop.
And have yourself a wonderful day.